Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
O'clock hour. Willie across the way, Willie Ramirez, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. Headed towards the 7 o'clock start of the Dan Mullen Radio Show. Of course, we got Thursday Night Football kicking off. Ravens, Dolphins. What are you going to do with this game? We talked about it to open the show. We just heard Scott Seidenberg say he's going to lay the points. What's your breakdown of the game?
I'm worried about the half point that's lingering on the seven, but I do think I think Baltimore can win by two touch or by double digits. I think it could be a 31-21 game. I think it could, you know, Baltimore scores late, covers. I tend to lean toward the over, though. As I mentioned earlier, I think this is sort of what we talked about with the Chiefs, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, when that offense was just dominating and the defense, they didn't care what their defense gave up. I mean, to a degree, it was more so, hey, you're just going to have to out-duel Patrick Mahomes, and they would, and the offense would always do what it did and win high-scoring games. I think that's what we're dealing with Baltimore. I really like the over in this game. Saw it at 51. But again, both defenses have been failures. And so I think Lamar Jackson's fired up. I was listening to a couple of press conferences, availabilities, interviews, whatnot. And it sounds like he really wants to get back on the field. It's prime time. He tends to shine in those moments. And I think Tua has something to prove. And I think Miami coming off a win against Atlanta is going to be a little bit fired up to get their second win. I don't know if they're climbing back in the division race as quick as Baltimore's going to. But I think that Miami could answer. The 4-4 against the spread this season. So they've showed that it has some fight, you know, in last week's win. And I expect Tua to battle against a Baltimore defense that's been really one of the worst in the NFL. So I think the best bet is the over. If I'm playing the game, I'd rather play the Ravens. And if anything, I'd put the Ravens in a teaser.
All right. I like it. You just paid a compliment to our previous guest, Scott Seidenberg. You hadn't heard him on the show before. He's been on for probably a couple months now, but you haven't been in on Thursdays. Why do you think he's so buttoned up and direct and aggressive? Where do you think he's from?
Don't tell me he's from New Jersey.
He is.
Well, he is. Why don't you learn from him?
Get better? Okay, there you go. So, interestingly enough, that dude is from Manalapan, New Jersey, which is also where Jay Glazer is from. He talks about Route 9 all the time. And then we've got our Jags insider, Mee O'Brien, who's now doing national sports talk with ESPN National and has been a standard in Jacksonville. Mia, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great. And don't forget, Jim Nance is from Marlboro. Let's touch them all up and down Route 9.
Where are you from? I know you told us before, but I forget things.
Oh, no, I'm actually from Freehold. So okay, I had someone last week, I forget who it was, they asked, I think it was actually one of my producers at ESPN. He was like, hey, so do you like Springsteen? Do you hate Springsteen? Like, I feel like it's one or the other. And I was like, I'm from Freehold, so I legally have to just worship him, especially because I am born and raised in Freehold and grew up right off of Route 9, quite literally. So that's why the bio doesn't lie on X or Twitter or whatever the kids are calling it these days.
Are you looking forward to seeing Jeremy Allen White portray Springsteen and view the movie?
I went last Thursday for an early showing ahead of my birthday because I was co-hosting with Gabe Neitzel on my birthday eve, and so my fiance and I, he and I, were not able to do a birthday and a movie dinner. So we did the movie on Thursday to see the Springsteen movie, which I thought the acting was excellent. I know a lot of people have commented about the disjointed nature of the script. I didn't tell Kevin anything. I think he thought it was going to be the whole autobiography, not just 18 months of Springsteen's life that defined the rest of his career.
Oh, wow.
But I appreciated it nonetheless because anytime you see your hometown on the big screen, I mean, that's pretty rad, right?
There you go.
Yeah, growing up, I was more of a Bon Jovi guy, but that was kind of my era, and he's a Sayreville guy. But over time,
yeah, also on Route 9, by the way, yeah. Should be noted. That's all the way down the north.
A lot of Route 9 pops. But you know what? Over time, I realized the legend of Springsteen, and he's actually He's kind of aged a lot better than Bon Jovi, and he Springsteen is incredible. So I've actually never been to a Springsteen concert. He's never coming to Vegas, so I'll have to go somewhere to go check him out.
Yeah, I've seen him twice. The first was about 3 years ago at the Amway Center down in Orlando, and the second time, or rather the first time, was when I was 1 year old at Freehold Day back in 1993 for the Bicentennial. Okay. I'll give you guys a fun fact about Route 9 because my dad would be proud of me for saying this on live radio.
Yes.
Real inside baseball here. My childhood neighbor, Rich Hansen, legendary high school coach in the state of New Jersey on the gridiron, coached at St. Peter's Prep, is now the athletic director there. Some of the noted alums, Will Hill, Savon Huggins, Minka Fitzpatrick, and now I'm starting to work more into your wheelhouse. Sure. Let's just say a lot of them didn't really live in North Jersey. A lot of them lived off Route 9, and as Rich cruised up from Freehold, he would just, you know, pick them, meet their parents on the side of Highway 9 and bring them on up to St. Peter's Prep. So let it be known that Highway 9 in at least my parents' household is also known for that.
There you go. I would break down New Jersey high school football with you, but we're in Vegas, so let's move on. Right, we could do this for 20 minutes. Okay.
Hey, you were talking Dolphins, so I bring up Minka for that reason.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I appreciate Savon Huggins because that's where I went to school at Rutgers. All right.
Yep.
Jaguars have an interesting travel deal coming out here. I think they're leaving kind of late. What's the story here?
Yeah, so they're leaving Saturday morning, which is actually earlier than they typically do, even for West Coast trips when they went out to San Francisco. They left about 2 o'clock on Saturday. They obviously won that game. If anything, not that they really care what the outside noise is saying, but they left on Monday night to fly out to London compared to the Rams, who literally got off the plane and played a football game. And many people here in Jacksonville critiques the Jags for that because, historically speaking, whenever they've gone to London, they've left on Thursday night. And so the fact that they're flying out Saturday morning, maybe it's not the Friday that some teams do, but it's not completely out of the ordinary for this team. Even under Doug Peterson, there were several West Coast trips that they flew out on Saturday. So not completely out of the ordinary, but because of the Florida-Georgia game here in the city of Jacksonville, they are going to leave early Saturday morning and then practice at Bishop Gorman High School, just because they will be leaving a little bit earlier than they're used to, and they typically get a walkthrough in at the Miller Electric Center before they head to the airport.
So I saw you tweet that out, and I quote tweeted that because I immediately confirmed with somebody, hey, they're coming to your school, right? And I got the confirm back that they were going to Gorman. But I also found it interesting you tweeted, NFL reminding teams of gambling policy. The team was addressed on Monday and will again be on Friday. Do not go into casinos at all. Do not even have dinner there.
What?
Yes, that is verbatim from the head coach, Liam Cohen. My contemporary on the beat, the Associated Press's Mark Long, asked the question in light of the NFL and the NFLPA sending out a memo last Friday reminding teams in light of the ongoings of the National Basketball Association to be mindful when it comes to gambling and being, you know, around either card games or sports wagering or whatever that may be. And so Liam noted that that has been already addressed with the team per the NFL's memo, and it will be addressed again tomorrow as well.
Yep, perception can be reality, so better to be safe than sorry. Saw the practice report that came out. Travis Hunter limited today with his knee, and I know that there were some people saying that that was the guy to watch. I know some people in the Raiders locker room were commenting they impressed with what he was doing. Can you update us with what's going on in the locker room with the Jaguars?
Yeah, I was not at practice today. I do moonlight as a professor at the University of North Florida, and so we actually have a great program with the Ritz-Carlton here in Amelia Island, and so I was up teaching today. So I was not on the field on Thursday or in the locker room. I was in the locker room yesterday, though, when I talked to Travis. So whatever this injury is, my guess is it popped up today. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more clarity from Liam Cohen on that front tomorrow. But ultimately, my expectation is that, yes, there is going to be to ensure that number 12 gets the football on the offensive side of the ball. There will also be intention to play him on the defensive side of the ball, considering, statistically speaking, he is the, if not one of the best-rated cornerbacks on this roster. And so on the offensive side, though, because that's obviously, I think, what's paramount to most, because that is the position the Jags started him at in his NFL tenure back in training camp, and that's been the position that many have likened him to, although he has played both. I think in light of Brian Thomas Jr.'s struggles, safe to say they're going to try to, I don't want to say force feed Travis Hunter, but with Brenton Strange still on IR, who has yet to drop a pass, Travis Hunter is the only other Jaguars pass catcher who has not dropped a pass and has not dropped multiple passes at that.
Jacksonville is 4-3 in a topsy-turvy AFC South that I don't think a lot of people had the way that it looks right now. Indianapolis 7-1, Jacks 4-3, Texans 3-4, Titans 1-7. Maybe the Titans, but what are the expectations right now, and then what is the message coming out to Vegas and how dangerous this team could be coming off a bye week?
Yeah, let's start with that second part. The conversation in the locker room has been, number one, everything we want is in front of us. We control our own destiny, and we know that. There has also been a twofold conversation, especially on the defensive side of the ball, this idea of, yes, we've lost two games to two very good teams. That doesn't mean we have to reinvent every single thing we do. With that said, we do need to evaluate, hey, if our best 11 players fit at these positions, even if that means maybe there's only one linebacker on the field, maybe that means there's only one safety on the field, a la Anthony Campanelli's mentor and Brian Flores and the defensive looks that he presents in Minnesota. Maybe we need to go to that because we want to ensure we have our best 11 on the field, regardless of, oh, you need to have three corners, you're in a nickel package. Maybe that's a safety at the nickel position. I don't know. And so I think that that's the fluidity that they've evaluated during the bye week. But other than that, this idea of, hey, we're good. It's okay. There are things to clean up. But when you consider that this team is the most penalized in the National Football League, and if you took those penalties, especially the pre-snap penalties, out of the equation, that has resulted in the Jaguars in terms of starting field position and in terms of yards and just down yards to go on first and second down, being 31st and 30th on first and second down in the National Football League, ultimately, they can clean things up. If they can stop shooting themselves in the foot, then truly everything they want is right in front of them.
Speaking with Mio O'Brien TV on X, covers the Jaguars. Speaking Jaguars Raiders here on ESPN Las Vegas with Cofield and Company. Let's talk a little bit about Trevor Lawrence, where he's at with his career. I mean, is he feeling any pressure? He sort of knows he's the guy, he's the franchise quarterback, but where how much pressure does he put on himself, and where is he at with his career in terms of what the front office is looking at, where they see, you know, his value to the organization?
Yeah, I mean, he's their guy. And while, yes, the previous regime paid him, this regime wouldn't have taken the job if they didn't believe in 16. And so they are committed to making this work. Now, the comp that I've given this, and at this point I've exhausted it on most radio programs across the country, is that so many looked at this operation and said it's going to be like Liam Cohen and Baker Mayfield, and it's going to be off the ground running from the jump. That was never the case, because ultimately Baker Mayfield, even if it was only a quarter of a season, had time with Liam Cohen and Sean McVay in 2022 in Los Angeles. He also had a year of Dave Canales to largely reclaim him, and already at least had training wheels on when Liam Cohen got to Tampa Town. In contrast, I think that the real comp we need to be looking at is Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan, circa the 2016 Atlanta Falcons, when Shanahan arrived as the OC. A lot of headbutting when they first got there. The team went 7-8-1. Matt Ryan was asked to remodel, retool much of his game. He wasn't too happy about that. Trevor Lawrence has embraced this idea of changing his footwork, of having to tie his footwork to his progressions, having to perhaps have more easy buttons, even if that means checkdowns, even though maybe he's gotten a little too accustomed to taking the checkdown at times so far through the last 6-7 weeks of the season. But ultimately, having solutions is something he noted in his first press conference since Liam Cohen was hired. And of course, being able to lean on a strong run game, that's not something he's been able to say each of the past two seasons. And so that's why I look at the Ryan and Shanahan comp that took a full year to really manifest itself. And when it did, they went to the Super Bowl. Now, granted, the difference is that they had a wide receiver by the name of Julio Jones. We'll see what happens with the Jaguars wide receiver room.
All right, Mia, we got to have some fun here real quick. And before we get to the really good stuff, you do the WBB podcast. I see you are, I'm assuming you're an AP voter, checking in with Doug Feinberg weekly with women's basketball. Is that correct?
With Mitch Northam, yes.
Okay.
I'm with Mitch Northam, the women's basketball podcast on OG Triangle Media.
No, but you're a voter in the AP Top 25, no?
On the men's side, yes.
Oh, on the men's side. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I cover the women's side, though, too.
Okay, well, I am getting ready to I'm planning an L.A. trip. I'm hoping to see USC South Carolina. Really want to see Jazzy Davidson in person, the number one recruit.
Hell yeah.
I did a story with her when she was in Chechia with the 19 and under team this past summer. What are you excited most about this season upcoming with women's basketball?
man, oh, man, that's a loaded one for you. Look, I think that there's been a lot made on both the women's and the men's side. I got to shout out my local Jacksonville basketball analyst, Jaguars linebacker Foye Oluokun. He and I talk a lot of basketball, and we have on the radio, we have on television before here locally. And we both looked at each other a few weeks ago when I was filling out my AP poll, and I was, like, having him kind of give me his thoughts. He's a massive Kentucky fan, by the way, so don't listen to any of his takes. You know, we said, like, I don't want to say both sports are in a crisis because that's extremely dramatic, but without Juju Watkins and with Braden Smith, the headliner on the men's side, who are the stars? I think that when you know Jazzy, when you look at Aliyah Chavez in Oklahoma, Addie Deal in Iowa, obviously I'm biased on that front given I covered the Hawkeyes, I think the 2020 recruiting class with Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers, but I think that there's room for stars to emerge. My hope is that we see stars like Lauren Betts, Flauje Johnson, Hannah Hidalgo actually seize the moment. I have questions about the operation at Notre Dame. I have questions about whether or not Flauje and Lauren Betts can actually settle in and seize that moment in crunch time, but that's what I think I'm most excited. I have no idea. Like both the men's and the women's side, I have no idea who's going to be good. I have no idea who's going to be the next person. And, of course, knowing full well that Juju Watkins returns in 2026, 2027, and how does that affect the landscape as well?
Yeah, so many storylines. One of the ones I'm really excited to talk about at some point, because I interviewed her as a freshman. She told me why she skipped over the entire country from Maryland when she had her choice as the number one recruit and chose UCLA. Keke Rice told me, I want to be the one that brings a national championship to Westwood for the first time ever. And sure enough, they were right there last year. They could do it this year. So I'm excited for her, and I'm excited to just see women's basketball to get started. All right, let's get to the real deal stuff. The most important question we've been asking everybody today. DoorDash did a research study, found that Reese's Peanut Butter Cups hold the crown as far as the top Halloween candy. What's B. O'Brien's top go-to Halloween candy?
Well, my mom's a dentist, so that made my upbringing very difficult. We were the house that gave out water bottles and pretzels, and my mom would go through my candy bag on Halloween night. So by the time I hit the fifth grade, I got smart, and I just stuck my pillowcase underneath my my bed, and I was just like, you know, I already put the candy away in the bowl. Sorry, Mom. So selfishly, I would say Dots. I would say any sort of Laffy Taffy sticky candy. But ultimately, for me, I'm such a sucker for candy corn. I know that's not
handed out. Yes!
I make a mistake every fall of putting a little cup out in our foyer when you walk into the house. And by golly, Kevin don't eat it. I'm the only one who eats it. And, it's bad. I mean, I'm eating, at least 10 of those bad boys a day as I'm walking in and walking out of the house. So, if anyone's wondering why my sugar count's pretty high, that's probably why.
You would have a good time if you came out to cover the Raiders, because in the media dining room, it looks like a concession stand, literally, on four sides. And one of them is just a full-blown big box of candies, from regular and peanut M&Ms to the Skittles to the Sour Patch to the Reese's to the gummy bear. You name the candy, it's just about everyone's out there, so it's pretty wild.
Oh, I remember it from when I was out there in December. I know not a lot of people cared or covered that day once upon a time back this past December. But to that point, it's funny you bring it up. The Jags have added a little candy wall of their own to the press box. It is nowhere near y'all's, nor is it anywhere near the Houston Texans, which I regard as the best press box. And I know Jaguar fans don't want to hear that, but I believe the Texans have the best press box in the National Football League. Straight up, they served caviar a few weeks ago. They're, trying to gun for, the PR group of the year, I guess. Their candy wall is the only one that can outdo y'all.
Mia, we appreciate it. Excellent job. Thanks for bringing it down for us.
Absolutely. If y'all ever want to talk women's basketball or men's basketball, too, hit me up. And, of course, Jags as well.
Yes, Jersey and Route 9, we need that too. So thank you.
Thank you. Later.
Holy moly, that was a good spot. I wish she had more energy.
We're definitely bringing her back for College Hoops.
She was mixing in y'alls with the Jersey accent.
Y'all draw with Route 9 and a little bit of College Hoops. A bit of Jacksonville.
There's a lot to go over there. That is back-to-back days we've had someone on. It was Michael Felder yesterday and now Mia O'Brien. On the candy corn thing, what is going on?
I like candy corn.
All right. I guess there are people who love this stuff.
I don't know.
It's the worst.
Do you?
I mean, you know what? Yeah, I actually will eat stuff that tastes like black licorice, Now, part of that is if I have to pick a shot, every once in a while I'll go with a Jaeger. So I'm conditioned to it. I know people hate Jaeger.
Don't like it.
God, it's cold, though. It's nice. It's a pick me up. It's a wake me up.
We used to drink something down at the Gold Coast back in the early 90s.
Uh-oh.
Called the Dead Cat.
Right.
And it involved Jaeger, 151. I'm going to have to think about it. There was at least four of them, and it was just, it was literally pitch black. And they put the whipped cream from the top of the, where the drink start, you know, at the top of the glass, up the, and over the rim and down. So that was the tail. You had to lick the whipped cream and shoot it. The record for at least 3-4 months was one. Nobody could do more.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah. Intense.
Okay. I'm not always nice.
Really?
Well, we know that.
How's your donut?
I'm just going to say, I actually gave it away.
I didn't finish it.
I had three pieces, yeah. It wasn't a bet.
By the way, I took a video of you slicing it daintily when you didn't know it.
Good.
So, yeah.
Good. I did my second go around on slicing it. That plastic knife sucked. It was just squishing
the
chocolate ganache.
To the show tweet.
Yes. Well, I'll put the donut tweet out in a second.
Hit it.
You folks around women's basketball, you don't have to pitch it so hard that you bring up that men's college basketball has no stars, so the women will usurp it. Now, I will admit, women's basketball stardom was pretty damn high when Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese were around. Juju did a pretty good job of getting a lot of attention, but nothing close to those two before she got hurt. There is not a shortage of men's basketball stars. You're going to know who these guys are. Now, here's the thing. It's a young game. I'm telling you, the three top freshmen who are probably going to go 1, 2, 3 in the draft, top five, are going to be megastars, like instant stars as soon as you start seeing them play. One is Boozer's kid. He's got twins at Duke, but Cam Boozer is ridiculous. There's a kid, Darren Peterson, at Kansas, who's going to be friggin' awesome. And then A.J. DeBonta at BYU. These guys are all going to be 20-point-per-game guys. They're going to be instant stars in college basketball.
So what you're doing is pre-debating something that was done, that I admittedly did two seasons ago, in that how college basketball had really the focus and the popularity had shifted, because we would throw that question out there. Hey, quick, name the top five. I haven't even said anything like that. You're already pre-debate. Oh, she did.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she was mentioning the shortage of male stars.
Oh, yeah.
There was a glory era with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
Yeah.
It's not.
And then Paige and Juju. And so, yeah.
But I don't even think Paige and Juju were at the same level, like anywhere close to the level.
I'm not even going to broach it. You're right. But the thing is Paige, if she didn't get injured, she would have been. She would have been in that class.
And I'm with you now. Paige will probably be the better overall player in the WNBA. She showed a lot in her rookie season.
Yeah, let's just say it. Caitlin drove the bus, but that entire era, as she mentioned, the 2020 class coming into the college ranks, it's just sent women's college basketball into a different spectrum altogether, and then pro.
And by the way, it's not to say I'm not excited about the women's season. I think it's going to be great. I love that UCLA is a friggin' superpower.
Yeah. That Kiki Rice is just, I love her personality. I love to watch her play. I love her. It's just Lauren Betts is all world. So she gets the headlines, but Kiki's just I interviewed her, like I said, as a freshman, and then when the Pac-12 would come to town. So there's a bit of an affinity there. You know, when you start covering somebody or following somebody and you're interviewing them every year, you tend to pay attention a little bit more. I'm really hoping that I could pull this trip off and I get to see USC South Carolina up close.
364-1100, caller 7-364-1100. Running Rebels will open up this Tuesday. That's the 4th at the Thomas and Mack, 7 o'clock start. UT Martin's in town. You can get tickets for the opener, UNLVtickets.com, UNLVtickets.com. Caller 7 right now, 364-1100.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, second half of the season upon us for UNLV football.
we'll call it second half of the bye week. There are seven games in, five left. You were taking a look at UNLV bowl predictions because
it's my new thing.
Boy, how about this? Seven games in, they've already qualified for a bowl game. Remember the days just like 4 years ago when it was like, hey, can they finally just get across the finish line and get a sixth win and get to the bowl or get to that, you know, elusive bowl game? And now they've done it seven games in.
Third year in a row. They've just knocked that off. And now that the goal is what? The Mountain West Championship. And then hopefully opening enough eyes. I think it's going to be tough this year, even if they win out, just with what we're seeing. You follow that a little bit closely. But as far as qualifying for the college football playoff, if they win out and they win the Mountain West Championship, do they still have a shot?
It's going to be tough. Going to need a lot of help around the country.
Yeah.
But, you know, but every one of these conferences is so deep, and they're all playing each other. So, I absolutely can see the CFP group of six rep having two losses.
Yeah. It's just a matter of how they look at UNLV. So these were based off Monday late morning. I'm not sure if any of these have been updated, but that's as of coming out of last week, which was week 9 in college football. CBS Sports had UNLV playing Coastal Carolina in the New Mexico Bowl. Athlon Sports had UNLV playing Kansas State in the First Responder Bowl. ESPN, now there's two, they do one big bowl projected column, but two different analysts. One has the Rebels playing TCU in the Liberty Bowl. The other one has them playing Arizona in the New Mexico Bowl. How about this one? Very intrigued with this one, Stephen. USA Today, UNLV versus New Mexico State in the New Mexico Bowl. Hello, Tony Sanchez. And then finally, SI.com with UNLV facing the mighty Ohio Bobcats in the Potato Bowl. I wouldn't mind the New Mexico State one just in terms of just storyline. Obviously wouldn't mind Kansas State, being that I've followed Avery Johnson for a couple of years. The Arizona with the proximity, you know. You think back, when you hear UNLV Arizona, the first thing you think of is those Tarkanian and Lute Olson days. And that's a long time ago. I get it. But I'm just saying, for us old schoolers, that's what you think of. So, nice little rivalry there. And then most recently, Lindy LaRock going against Arizona in the NC2A tournament when she faced Adia Barnes. And they had a lead going into the fourth quarter in that game. But a couple of intriguing matchups if they were to come to fruition.
I'd much rather see them, and I don't know how fans feel. I'd much rather see them play a Power Four school. I just think that does more for you. As far as location, no one's got the Hawaii Bowl in here, huh?
Mm-mm.
Okay, that could be a possibility too.
Is the LA Bowl?
LA Bowl's first place. So someone was to make the CFP from, the title game runner up would get the LA Bowl if the winner made the CFP.
Gotcha.
12 team field.
Gotcha.
So that I'm not sure about the order. It starts to jump all over the place. Last year, I know San Jose State kind of cut a deal with the Hawaii Bowl early. There's other potential spots if Power Four conferences can't fill out, their conference bowl slate, their bowl agreements. So UNLV could head in a lot of places. But these are the basics.
I have to wonder, the ones that are penciled in that are, Mountain West 3 versus this conference, you say, whatever, is that specific? Is that in ink, or is it that's what's suggested?
Yeah.
Because, so what I'm wondering is if with some of those bowls and relationships, if the powers that be at the Mountain West say, hey, they're defecting. We don't endorse that team.
Oh, I don't know if the conference would have power over that. Maybe. But when they do, I think in any of these conferences, when you get out after, we'll say after the first choice, I think when they have, Mountain West 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that just means you get the second choice. So if you wanted to take the fifth team because it travels better and that's more attractive to you, then you could do that.
Speaking of which, we've had those conversations with whom annually? Our good friend, John Cicente.
Johnny Sack.
I've made you aware earlier this year, one of the funnest TikToks to follow has been Barstool Gruden when he gets the boxes.
Pretty good.
right? And he's opening up. Look what I got today. And he opens it up with the razor blade. Did you see the new Las Vegas Bowl social media trend that's going on?
No.
Johnny Sack comes walking in going, got a box today. He opens up the office door. Look what's waiting on the doorstep. We got a box. Pulls it in. Here's where the lobbying begins.
What's in the box? Not that way.
Okay. Got a box. It is. Very energetic.
That was from the movie Seven when the lady's head was in the box.
Oh, he was very.
Maybe he'll do one for Halloween and pull out a head. I don't know.
It was very good. He did it from. They got a box from USC. I texted him, told him to save me a hoodie in case I go down to the.
Very creative.
It was good. It was. It's obvious a knockoff, but it was. It's a nice little. You know what? It's kind of cool because now you got something going. And they're going to continue to lobby, and he's going to say, well, we got a box this week. Who's lobbying the Las Vegas Bowl?
Let's talk swag for a second. You see the shirt I have on? So I've got a UNLV shirt on. You made a face.
The logo that never was.
Yeah. I had a jacket on last night. It's actually kind of my backup jacket. Okay. Not a sports coat, just like a little, you know, zip-up fall spring jacket.
Okay.
And it had the alternate...
Members only?
Oh. The alternate logo on it. And... our good friend Dan Dolby walked up to me and he's like, where'd you get that? Like, just so disappointed. And he told me that if I burn the jacket on video, that he will get me a new UNLV jacket. He says there's something sort of similar looking to the old starter jackets. So, someone did actually show me. Actually, you know who it was? It was Paul Gutierrez, a Rebel alum and, you know, works for Raiders.com. He was at the coach's show last night, and he showed me a vintage starter jacket from the 80s, UNLV starter jacket, and it was up on something for like $250.
That was a big deal when starter jackets when they first came out. Yeah. I still have the very first Dallas Cowboys starter jacket I ever got.
You have it?
Yeah.
Ever wear it? Can you fit into it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not the very first one ever made. My first ever.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas gift, yeah.
Adam Hill chimed in because Adam was actually at the Passner show last night over at the Orleans and quickly said, Cofield will never throw that jacket out. He doesn't throw any clothes out ever.
Yeah, I'm betting against the burning of the clothes.
I have to see the jacket. And I like the jacket I have. It's a very utilitarian jacket. I get a lot of use out of it.
If it were me.
Yeah.
I would be the horse's ass that would be wearing that jacket at least five more times than originally planned,
sure.
Knowing when Dan was going to be there.
Well, why do you think I threw on the logo and the shirt with the logo tonight?
He's going to be at the show.
He'll be at the Dan Mullen radio show tonight, so why not? Why not? The logo that everyone hated except Cofield liked it because when it's on clearance and it's old, Cofield likes that. I'll go in third person.
Okay.
And I did mention that Adam Hill is right. He knows me. I don't throw clothes out. Every once in a while, like I had pants that were like 32s. That's not going to happen again.
Right.
34 might happen. We're talking waist size.
I know what you're talking
about. But as I get older and I shrink, now I'm going to start to need like 36, 24.
I remember when I worked at Miller's Outpost.
Sure.
Selling Levi's, and it was 30-30s.
You're a tiny man.
Now they're 36-30s.
Sure.
I can get in 34-30s, but I like the...
You can get in them now?
34-30s?
Wow.
Right now, no, but I can wear 34... I have stuff that's 34.
Wow. Okay.
You're
surprisingly svelte based on your looks. 34. Yeah. I don't think I get a leg in 34-30. It would be very, very uncomfortable. I will say this, and I did mention it last night, because I don't throw anything out, and I am a flannel fanatic, say that five times, I don't throw out flannels. So I do have a collection that started back in 1989.
Moths haven't gotten them?
Did you? Nope. No. I don't take care of a lot of things. Those are taken care of. I will pull out the bin full of, think about what I just said.
I heard you.
Flannel shirts that are now, do the math, 36 years old.
You know what I brought back a little bit, and I still have the two pair. I just haven't worn them.
Why am I proud of that?
Corduroys.
I had purchased some corduroys about 10 years ago, and I ripped them out. I pulled him out a couple weeks ago. Don't know if I liked him as much as I did back in the day.
Yeah.
I will tell you, corduroys, the difficult physiques for corduroys are if you are a big fella or big lady and your legs rub together a little bit, the inside is real smooth. After while, you literally, the friction.
Yes. All of a sudden, those corduroy, the ridges, there's no more ridge. Yeah, you know.
They all go away.
You know what was in and popular sort of with the Vegas nightlife and the hip-hop scene, whatever.
We are old. I mean, do you hear what we're talking about?
Overalls.
Yeah.
Baggy overalls with Doc Martens when the Doc Martens first came
out. I was never cool enough.
That's true. Still not.
We'll leave it at that, yeah. I'm still not. You're right. I'm bragging about having 36-year-old flannels. What a moron. Dan Mullen this week at his press conference gave a lot of kudos, a lot of respect to Jason Eck and what New Mexico's done. Eck went in there as an FCS coach and brought a bunch of his guys, recruited a bunch of FCS players, got a real good haul out of the transfer portal. And I thought this was real interesting. Mullen kind of talking about what's changed since he was out of college football, did some TV. And, you know, in the past, Willie, first-year coach, you'd get there and you're like, okay, well, I got the existing roster. I got to blend in some new guys, but I got, you know, what's going to happen to the guys who are here? I know
here.
Caleb Herring talked a lot about difficulty with Bobby Hauk adjusting to the guys he had and didn't always seem to be super in favor of the guys who were there versus the guys he was bringing in. But Dan Mullen talks here about, hey, when you hit the ground, that is your program. The guys you bring in, the guys who stay around, it is your program. You have ownership, and you got to be good right away.
Especially when you're in a first-year defense, you know, for the guys of where with the amount of variety we've seen for the whole year so far, right? From a run-and-shoot team to really you're not sure what you're getting for a couple of games, to triple option, to the power run with all the different formations. When I think the one issue for some of our guys, when you don't have wealth of knowledge, like if you ordinate, like, let's say, not knowledge, not experience, that kind of the comfort of doing it so many times, right? I mean, Paul took over in the middle of spring. I mean, really just got taught a couple of things to finish spring. So the teams really had a training camp to kind of learn, and they're going against our offense. And so, hey, our offense doesn't run the triple option. Our offense, you know, we're not a lot of 13 personnel all over the, like, so holy, and then this is new, and then that's new. And then, you know, hey, there's a two quarterback system in now. How do we fit, like, just, when those little variations start to hit, you have guys that are sitting there saying, okay, and I'm just supposed to be in this gap and not do anything else. And
what do you think about what Mullen said there about, hey, they're still in their learning phase here with all these new guys and all these different offensive approaches while they run a different sort of offense? I mean, that comes with the biz. You got to adjust. So I don't know if fans are going to want to hear, like, hey, you know, be patient. There's still an adjustment process.
No, but he doesn't say it there, but if you've listened to what he's had to say and the character that he's brought with him from the introductory press conference, who else is in still learning and in a learning phase in the first year? The coaching staff. So he's learning about them as much as they're learning about his system, and he buys into that, and that's why he appreciates and respects the players, because he's in the same role.
I like that he talks about it. I like that he admits, hey, like, this is at a base level. Yeah, like, we don't know everything about our team. And I'm sure their fans were like, why not? As he explained the other day, he's like, listen, we're all trying to learn each other. He also said, you know, in practice, you got to be real careful. Like, you practice against each other and you're like, oh, I think specifically you might have mentioned, like, blitz, right? He's like, man, this guy's really good blitzing. And then he said, well, maybe you come to realize that maybe he ain't that good at blitzing, and our guy on the other side ain't that good at protecting against the blitz. So there's this adjustment throughout the season, and that's what makes great coaches, right? No one is stand pat throughout the season.
That's why this game is going to tell us a lot more than the previous games off bye weeks, because they're coming off a butt whooping.
Yeah.
And this is the game where we're going to learn about defensive adjustments going up against a team like New Mexico that's hungry. This is the game where you're going to see what everybody's learned.
Here's Mullen talking about, and he said it all year, just on defense, just do your job. You have a responsibility, just do your job. And they've been practicing and preaching that.
If we make a mistake, whether offensively or defensively at practice, let him run that play again at practice. One guy made a mistake. We run it again. A different guy makes a mistake. Than that. I'm like, you did it. Just did it right. It wasn't you. He's like, oh, I'm trying to make a play. The other guy made a mistake, so I'm trying to cover for him. Like, well, no, he the next time he didn't make a mistake, he was right where he was supposed to be. We made the play. We don't need you to do that. And that, you know, that kind of a learning, these are younger guys too, but that's part of us in teaching of making sure that everybody trusts and understands where they're supposed to be and do what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And you see that defensively, like sometimes where guys are trying to make plays when they don't need to, you know, just be where you're supposed to be and it'll all work out.
And to me, that's been the issue all season. I don't think it's a lack of talent. I don't think it's a bad scheme. I think it's just concentration. And that is coaching. That is coaching to make sure your guys are concentrating and they're, you know, they're where they're supposed to be and they're not trying to play hero ball and make plays outside of what their responsibility is.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So get your tickets for UNLV football. We were just talking about some comments from Dan Mullen on his defense, New Mexico, UNLVtickets.com, UNLVtickets.com. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, if you didn't hear it, there is a $99 special right now, which gives you multiple tickets to multiple – well, it's a ticket to multiple events. And at the top of the list are the football games and the runner-up basketball games in November. Go check it out. I mean, the price is ridiculous. When I saw them run down the whole list, they went down the whole thing during a promo over at the Thomas and Mack for that exhibition game. I was like, wow, this is like $6 an event. And right now, I think we have an exciting Rebel season on the way, and the Rebel football team's in damn good shape, and we know the Lady Rebels are going to be really good. Go in the bag. So
stick your hand in there, Dave.
I'm starting to see my wish come true. On Monday, I was ranting and raving that, man, I hope the first wave, this whole wish list that all these schools have, like this, right now there's like seven, you know, Power Four jobs open. I hope they have to, they get freaking turned down by everyone and they have to go to the second list and then panic's going to set in. But Matt Rhule is probably off the board. Matt Rhule signed at Nebraska. He would be a favorite for Penn State. He went there, he played there. He just signed a two-year extension. He has a $15 million buyout to leave. 90% of the contract is guaranteed. The buyout, if fired, which Matt Rhule has done okay. He hasn't done great. They've made incremental improvement. Like, they're not a 10-win program yet. I don't know if they're going to get there. His current buyout went from $49 million if fired early to $71 million. And the person who tweeted this is like, we are never breaking this cycle. Like, people are outraged, including the Louisiana governor, that I'll get to that part too, but that Brian Kelly has a $53 million buyout, and then Nebraska within a couple of days is like $71 million buyout. Why? No one is worth that much money, and he hasn't shown enough. If he wants to go, go. And I don't think they should have extended him. I think we're going to be in a situation in a year and a half where they're like, oh, crap, Matt Rhule hasn't done what we wanted him to do. You smiled at the Louisiana governor thing. This is insane.
Didn't we talk about this on Monday?
We talked about it on Monday, and I was like, the smallest part of me wishes that Lombardo would get involved. And now what can happen when a governor's out of friggin' control. This guy is making the LSU job into the Cowboys job. No one's going to want the job. Were you breathing down my neck?
Because Monday we talked about it because of the X amount of letters that were being sent to Kathy Engelbert and the WNBA to make the, you know, politicians sending letters to sports to get involved. Now the Louisiana governor says no, they're not making the decision on the next head coach. Dude, shut up. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
That is insanely ridiculous.
You know, it's interesting, though. Let me tell you, on social media, you find out just how big that job is in Louisiana. Going back, the history of the program is absolutely intertwined with, we'll say, famous Governor Huey Long, who basically started the program, wrote like three of their fight songs, would allot money for fans to travel to road games. Had a program where there were cheap train tickets to go on the road. Those are all positives, but you can't hire the head coach. You can't run the program, Gov.